So, they haven't made it public yet. That's a little odd, Ryan thought.
It is, Ben Goodley agreed.
Any idea why they're sitting on the news?
No, sir.
So, you going to offer our help to our friends in Moscow? Ryan shook his head. I can't let them know that we know. Sergei Nikolaevich would start wondering how, and he'd probably come up with SIGINT, and that's a method of gathering information that we try to keep covert. Golovko could guess at Signal's intelligence, but he'd never quite know. I'll call Sam Sherman at Atlantic Richfield, Winston suggested. If he breaks it to me, then it's in the open. Economy looking good? No complaints from me or Mark Gant.
Ben, would you believe the Vatican is appointing a papal nuncio to the PRC?
Oh? What's that mean exactly? Winston asked.
People forget that the Vatican is a nation state and has the usual trappings of statehood. That includes diplomatic representation. A nuncio is an ambassador and a spook, Ryan added.
Really?
George, the Vatican has the world's oldest intelligence service. Goes back centuries. They're good enough at gathering information that we've made the occasional effort to crack their communications.
We still do that?
Winston directed this question at Goodley, the president's national security advisor.
Yes, sir.
Their ciphers are a little old-fashioned, and we can brute-force them.
And ours?
The current standard is called tap dance. It's totally random, and therefore it's theoretically unbreakable.
George, get your friend Gant briefed in on these developments in Russia, Ryan suggested. Maybe he can model the effects they'll have on the Russian economy.
Sergei Nikolaevich, what do you propose?
Comrade President, these two discoveries are a gift from heaven. If we utilize them properly, we can transform our country.
And so, who gets the concession to exploit these resources?
In the case of the oil, our own exploration company, plus the American company Atlantic Richfield.
And the gold strike?
No foreigners were involved in that discovery. Comrade Gogol will have an interest, of course, but he is an old man with no heirs.
And the value of this venture?
Upwards of 70 billions. And all we need to do is purchase some special equipment, the best of which comes from the American company Caterpillar.
Is that necessary, Sergei?
Comrade President, the Americans are our friends, and it will not hurt us to remain on good terms with their president.
Any progress in the attack on your car?
No. The current thinking is that this Avseyenko fellow was the actual target. The militia continues to investigate.
Keep me posted, will you?
Of course, Comrade President.
Married life agrees with you, Andrea, President Ryan observed with a smile at his principal agent.
Pat is a very good man, even for a bureau puke.
What's he doing now?
He's up in Philadelphia. Director Murray sent him off on a bank robbery. Two local cops got killed in that one.
Tell him to be careful.
Inspector Pat O'Day had saved his youngest daughter Katie's life less than a year before, and that had earned him undying presidential solicitude.
Okay, what's the schedule look like?
His business appointments were on his desk already.
Andrea Price O'Day filled him in on the other sort every morning after his national security briefing from Ben Goodley.
Neither Ryan nor his family was entirely used to the restrictions imposed on the life of the President of the United States or his immediate family members. It was getting especially tough on Sally, who'd started dating. Little Jack, on the other hand, thought it was pretty neat.
Yes, Pasha, Lieutenant Provalov said.
Pavel Petrovich Klusov was a man the bulk of whose calories came in liquid form, and whose association with soap was less intimate than it ought to have been. Klusov was a petty thief, lacking the talent to be a major violator of the law. But he knew those who were.
Avseyenko was killed by two men from St. Petersburg. I do not know their names, but I think they were hired by Klementy Ivanich Suvorov. The killers are former Spetsnaz soldiers with experience in Afghanistan. One is blonde, the other red-haired. After killing Grisha, they flew back north.
Have you seen their faces?
No, Comrade Lieutenant. I learned this from someone I know.
Did your acquaintance say why our friend Suvorov had Avseyenko killed?
The informant shrugged.
Both were KGB. Maybe there was bad blood between them.
What exactly is Suvorov doing now?
I am told he lives well, but the source of his income, no one knows.
Provalov's mind was already spinning. Okay, a former KGB officer had hired two former Spetsnaz soldiers to eliminate another former KGB officer who'd specialized in running girls. So many KGB officers had been let go by their parents' service, and they had training in conspiracy. Suvorov. Must track that name down and get a photo. Anything else? The lieutenant asked. Kluzov shook his head.
That is all I have uncovered.
Well, not too bad. Call me when you discover more.
Yes, comrade lieutenant.
The militia lieutenant paid the bar bill and headed outside. You need to pick a better place for your meats, Oleg, a familiar voice suggested from behind. Provalov turned. It is a big city, Mishka, with many drinking places, and most of them are poorly lit. And I found yours, Oleg Grigorievich. So, what have you learned? Provalov summarized what he'd found out. Two shooters from Spetsnaz? What would that cost? 5,000 euros or so? And who would have that much money to throw around? A Muscovite criminal? Mishka, as you well know, there are hundreds who could afford it. And I have a new name, Suvorov, Klementy Ivanovich. Who is he? I do not know. But Kluzov acted as though I ought to have known it well. Strange that I do not. It happens. I've had wise guys turn up from nowhere, too. The city of St. Petersburg was known to some as the Venice of the North for the rivers and canals that cut through it. And it was in one of those rivers that the next clue appeared. A citizen had spotted it on his way to work, and seeing a militiaman, he'd pointed, and the policeman had looked over the iron railing. It only took a second for the cop to know what it was. The top of a human head with blonde hair. The militiaman made his call to headquarters, and in 30 minutes a car showed up, followed by a black van. The arriving men were detectives from the city's homicide bureau. The van had a pair of technicians. A ladder was set up, and the junior man, dressed in waterproof coveralls, climbed down. That's when the first surprise happened. The routine was to put a flexible collar on the body under the arm so that the body could be winched up. But when he worked to get the collar under the body, one of the arms wouldn't move at all, and the worker found that it was handcuffed to another arm. It was clear in a moment. Two men, one with blonde, the other with what appeared to be reddish hair. From appearances, they'd been in the water for 3 or 4 days. The body recovery team loaded the bags into their van. It was a slow day in the St. Petersburg morgue. The senior pathologist, Dr. Alexander Konev, was waiting in the autopsy room when the bodies arrived. So, the pathologist asked, were they killed by the militia? Not officially, the senior detective replied. The physician's gloved hands felt around one head and the other. Ah, both victims seem to have been shot. They were handcuffed after death, strangely enough. No bruising on either wrist. Why do it afterwards? Keeps the bodies together, the senior detective thought aloud. What's that? Konev saw a tattoo on the left bicep of the blonde one, then turned to C. They both have the same tattoo. The senior detective came over to C. Spetsnaz. The Red Star and Thunderbolt. These two were in Afghanistan. This double killing had every hallmark of professionalism. No sign of a struggle, and both were manifestly fit, trained, dangerous men. They'd been taken unawares, and that usually meant someone they both knew and trusted. Why criminals trusted anyone in their community was something neither detective quite understood.